Hey everyone, it's Jake, not your normal cold open this week. We had an episode planned for last evening, and Ruben's internet disconnected the moment we started recording that episode. So instead of talking about the topic at hand, Michelle and I started decompressing about our viewing of David Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future, and we felt it was good enough to just put out as this week's episode. If you haven't seen David Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future, and you do want to see it, well, please watch it before listening. We kind of don't do any much of a spoiler warning. This is your spoiler warning. We just start talking about the film. If you don't care about David Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future, I'll first apologize for how much we talk about it. And I'll say that we get into some other things as well that you might still find relevant. Regardless, you won't need to worry about the spoilers. So if you think this sucks, just email me, Jake, at pigironpodcast@gmail.com. And, you know, we'll know not to do similar things in the future. We won't throw out ad hocs like this. But in the interest of keeping our episodes up and in the interest of sharing what Michelle and I were talking about, because we didn't have anything else to record, here's your normal pig iron content. Enjoy.
That's the problem with expectations. You think something's going to be good.
You got to tell me.
Fucking life is going to
tell me more about that, Michelle.
Remind you gently. Yeah, no. Everything is fucking bad. Nothing is good. It's like the whole of the states are in the thrall of anhedonia. It's so weird and not good. Everyone I think I've met recently.
Oh, man.
Everyone I've met recently, like at work, outside of work, they're just dejected. They all look like an animal was shot in front of them, like a house pet. It's awful, man. Hello, my name is Michelle Perez. Welcome to the Pig Iron Podcast. I'm joined with a menagerie of buddies today. We have Buddy Jake.
Hey,
and we have Buddy Ruben.
And I'm just going to say, in response to Michelle's intro, I thought Crimes of the Future was like just okay.
Crimes of the Future.
Michelle thought Crimes of the Future. Michelle stumbled out of the movie. With her head in her hands and thinking of a brighter Cronenberg, a better Cronenberg.
No. That's the problem here.
I feel like you were let down.
It's imagine if someone was caught in their own artifice. Imagine if Ruben were connected.
Keep going. Let's hope he comes back.
Okay, no, he's dead.
Just keep going.
He died. Imagine if Tim Burton became like entranced in his own artifice and wasn't capable of making other things.
I'm not gonna cut you off. That's my bad.
Continue. Yeah, you're good. You're good. What I'd say is, have you ever seen Big Eyes, Jake?
I have not seen Big Eyes, but I have seen it's not called Big Fish, right? It's not called
Big Fish. It is called Big Fish.
Motherfuck, this dude made two big movies. Okay, I've seen Big Fish.
All right, Big Eyes is not a Big Fish style film.
I absolutely tricked myself.
No, Big Fish still works within the framework of like Tim Burton's artifice. It just works in a warmer
it does have Danny DeVito in a top hat, so I can't argue against that.
It has a warmer sort of fairy tale quality to it, as opposed to the twisted fairy tale thing.
Yes.
And you know, Cronenberg obviously has more than one mode. His work with Mortensen, God, for that one streak in the day, it was A History of Violence, A History of Violence, then Eastern Promises. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
and like a dangerous method.
I want to note, I haven't seen any of those. I've only seen a lot of early Cronenberg stuff and not a lot of the after the year 2000 Cronenberg stuff.
History of Violence is a comic book adaptation, if you can believe it.
I knew that. I knew that because I was a comics nerd and people like just pointed that out to me and such, but I've never seen it, nor have I read the source material.
Hmm.
I wish I had, honestly, I should. I remember at the time wanting to and still believing like I wasn't going to be able to go see it at the movie theater. My mom was like, no, I don't want to see that shit. And then I just never watched it in the era of being around, you know, an adult who watches movies. Mm-hmm. But I know it's like a very, I think at the time I didn't think of it as a Cronenberg movie, right? A, I didn't know a lot about Cronenberg, but B, the only thing I knew of him was The Fly and to a lesser extent Videodrome. And if you look at a movie like Eastern Promises on the surface, you go, oh, that's nothing like those. And so as a kid, I didn't even think of it. I didn't even know. I mean, Eastern Promises and A History of Violence. I would say this applies to both of those things that I'm saying. I looked at those as a kid and didn't think those were Cronenberg movies at all.
Yeah. For me, I think everyone that, you know, sometimes gets hung up on their own taste or their sense of good taste, I think they have the same blinders everyone else has.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's a way to broach that without it being a referendum on the entirety of Cronenberg's like whole deal. I think it's more interesting when it's concepts he's playing with in a playground, and instead the film's conceit is that it's like sort of self-aware and a old dying artist,
right? It's like
doing
truly
performance
is like
art involving organs.
The idea of Cronenberg casting Viggo to have like gray hair and be old and generally look kind of like Cronenberg is very funny.
It just looks like
wearing all black all the time, right?
Yeah,
like sulking.
It's
very on the nose now that I think about it. Yeah,
this whole deal is just basically, yeah, he is Cronenberg wearing Rick Owens all the time. Viggo Mortensen looks like a fucking ninja throughout the film. And honestly, I get it. That's still like, there's a beating heart behind all of this, but it's also just like, it doesn't do anything with the sense of exploration that the other films had. There's more in the way of commentary on the current moment.
Mm.
And instead of like something like Existenz, like, have you ever seen that one?
No, that's actually when we were talking earlier, I brought that up. I was like, I never even saw that.
So yeah, Existenz,
the only other sci-fi one that he really has.
Existenz has scenes that you watch them and you're just genuinely like, I've never seen anything like that before. That's fucking insane. Mm-hmm. Like a man assembles a gun made out of bones at a meal and then blasts someone with it. Like one of the coolest fucking things in that film. And it's kind of got mixed production value. And again, this film sort of has mixed production value. There's CGI. There's, yes, some practical effects, which was a big thing that was sort of glommed upon as it relates to this movie. I don't think it's extensive as I would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
But not just that. Like, there's just... It's sort of like a sort of nod to all of his own work in a way that just rubs me wrong. too nostalgic and has this sort of parable about like sort of reconciling change. And at the end, it's just basically like, no, eat the microplastics, eat the bugs, eat the bugs.
It's a movie that feels like a short story because of the flatness of that ending to me. It's like, oh, it really doesn't have a ton to say, like short stories, right? It's like, by design, you're going to get to a conclusion that's probably pretty abrupt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's why it reminded me of that. It's like, oh, I guess there's a lot about this movie that we just don't get to see that I think would be interesting to see, but is rather just implied, right? Like a lot about the future world. And I get that a lot of that is also low budgetary and not even like directly because of it, but because like you're shooting a movie called Crimes of the Future, but you're in like the fucking Grecian, like decrepit, like landscape, and then also beat up industrial, like whatever buildings, you know.
Yeah,
it's a small movie. It feels like even though they're in the future world, they're in like a very tiny part of it. Even though apparently that part also intersects with the world of body modification art, which is popping off. And I, you know, there's a lot about the movie that's very silly. Where if you question a couple things, you're like, huh? It just doesn't matter. Like, it's not there for that. You don't need to know why only two people work at the fucking New Organ Registry and like nobody else is there. It's a short story, you know?
There are also just conceits of it that sort of don't make a whole lot of sense unless you answer some definitive questions about this setting.
Right.
Which the film front loads very heavy.
Right.
So there's just like a lot of threads of people cutting one another open. And it's implied that a sort of new form of sex has evolved from this point.
And yeah.
Sex is referred to as the old sex. I think I get why there was this sort of air of the film where there was going to be him finally glomming onto that directly and combining surgery and sex somehow. And then it's actually cool for like the first 5 seconds, right up until you realize, oh, this is all there is for Vigo.
Yes, that's what I felt like too, where you see like, I feel like you see this image several times throughout the film, and it's just someone on the street cutting someone else on the street. And the first time you see it, you're like, okay, I get it. It's world building. Ooh, that's kind of weird. I wonder what's up. And then you just see the same thing happen like probably 4 more times in the film. And you're just like, okay, so this is all that people do now. They just cut each other with knives and look freaky while they're doing it. Like, there's no...
No scars form. Yeah, there's no scars form. There's no anesthetic. Blood.
They mentioned that there's no infection, so you have no question for that, but like people aren't walking around with like, you know, big sections of their like face cut up or anything like that. You don't really see anything like that in the movie outside of the artistic performance aspect of it. So it's weird. They imply this cultural fetishism that you only see one rather tepid example of.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, it's much more about the artists themselves going through almost like discovering that for the first time, which you'd think would be weird if other people are doing that in the world that they live in, or like cutting themselves for pleasure. But
they're cutting themselves for pleasure, but you know, it seems to be implied that it's a part of the tool itself. Like there's this weird little green film or sort of energy around the blade itself was operated with the robot thingy, which fine, whatever.
I don't think I noticed that as much. I should go back and look at that.
Like, if the implication is the tool, and then the story third with which it's like, we created new types of guys.
We
cut out stuff out of the father, and then you know the stuff in the kid is a different stuff.
And obviously, there is that, like, I guess the actual implication is that I think if we're to read this film, it's that we're all eating microplastics. Eventually, it's going to make people grow new organs. And that to some end, those organs will allow you to digest plastic. Except then the film contradicts that by saying that it was a surgical procedure that allowed people to digest plastics, and that it wasn't natural.
Well, the people of that air quotes movement, basically, right. What they're doing is they
are they like accelerationists? You know, they're like
they make the surgery work in such a way whereupon, like, yeah, they get the outcome of being able to eat plastic. So now, you know, apparently arranging it in such a way where, yeah, that outcome happens.
Because it's like, okay, I'm going to walk through this logically. Spoilers for Crimes of the Future, in case you haven't heard.
Yeah, no, this is Oops All Crimes of the Future now. Thank God.
Okay. I don't even care if we end up publishing this. If we do, I'm keeping this part in. But.
Fuck. You gotta stop playing your cards on the table. Then. Fuck.
Kid eats plastic. Michelle, we're
Kid
not
eats
live.
Plastic.
Let me play in my editing land. Kid eats plastic, right? Okay, we know this. Kid eats and digests plastic. Presumably his poop looks really funny. We never talk about that in the movie.
Poop of the future.
Yeah, he poop.
Well,
presumably,
no, dude.
Presumably his
that's
poop
the
doesn't
organs.
Smell. His poop the... doesn't smell at all. Or maybe he doesn't poop. I don't know. We don't want to think about that.
Mm.
But okay, kid eats and digests plastic, right? That's off the bat. Kid is murdered. We believe that kid is a biologically evolutionary next step of humankind that is adapting to microplastics in the body. Okay, so then movie introduces a sect of people who are eating microplastics and subsisting off of them and actively trying to, I guess, unite everyone else who is like this. And you're like, okay, there's these people. So in my head, I'm watching the movie. I go, these people have been around and are clearly like operating in secret. And I'm just thinking it's X-Men at this point. I'm like, oh, they're literally the X-Men. They're different humans and they're maneuvering in secret. But then the movie goes, no, those people performed surgery on themselves in order to eat plastic. Did it to such a successful degree that there are thousands of them, and this child is only now the first biological result of people with those surgeries breeding with regular humans, and thus there's no natural adaptation of humans into it's the whole thing is like a forced effort, you know what I mean? So like then I feel like the metaphor is like, what are we talking about anymore? That humans should not eat microplastics or what? Like, it's very weird. I think it falls apart when they're like, oh no, we all have these very specific surgery scars, and this kid is the first one of us who doesn't. The implication, of course, being that you can modify yourself through surgery and then fuck someone, and then your modified surgical traits will be passed down to that kid. Which, you know, Viggo Mortensen in the movie even makes fun of. He's like, if I cut off my pinky, my kid won't not have a pinky.
Yeah.
So then the movie doesn't come back to that. I don't know. I think that's, again, one of those short story things that just felt like I had written maybe a simpler version, but a more cohesive version in my head.
You're basically, that's not even
like,
the worst part.
Why couldn't those people why did they have to make themselves plastic eaters? It's so weird to me. Like,
this
I don't
is,
know.
This is basically like a problem in progress.
Yeah.
This happens in a few of the newer, well, air quotes, newer to you, Cronenberg films, in that A History of Violence is a film about, you know, a man sort of has a chance encounter with someone who knew him from his past, and, you know, this is after he actually sort of does something heroic. He intercedes when someone tries to hold up his little restaurant.
And I mean this in a very genuine way. It's like serious talk. It's like This is pre-John Wick. This is like an archetype for a John Wick thing. This is retired killer has to go back to being a killer.
But the difference between this and John Wick is
obviously
all of the tactical stuff is sort of imbued with a romantic sort of anti-hero or dark hero sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
A History of Violence is how do you walk through someone actually going through that? What do they do to like make their footprint smaller? And then how much of yourself can you peel back really? Or if not peel back, like cover up until, you know, it's going to come out sooner or later if you mm-hmm. give it the right conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern Promises kind of, you know, changing the hands of some crime family shit. Two people meet and are indelibly changed having met one another. It's kind of romantic in this way. Like shit like that is going on. There's always things sort of in progress, a sort of life in progress deal. I think it does you towards a short story thing that we won't have any of these larger problems resolved, but the idea of someone living point A to point B, it's kind of like depressing and resigned in that way I was mentioning earlier, in that, yeah, no, he takes a bite of the fucking plastic candy bar, and by God, it's delicious. We see him smile for the first fucking time.
It's literally so corny, bro. And it turns to black and white, and he's like, it looks like he's, you know, he's like staring up into God knows, into heaven, into the ceiling of his weird breakfast room.
Like, yeah, like, it, no, he's, the implication is like, he isn't in pain anymore.
Right.
He's ever needed is this plastic. He was like them all along, basically. Right.
Which does imply that it was that they didn't need to be surgical. So maybe I am talking myself back into just like, maybe I was just being a little pedantic back then.
But yeah, but that's the thing.
like, it's so weird. It's also weird that the movie sets up this like bait and switch with wanting to see the inside of a kid's anatomy, which is so fucked up. Because the whole, yeah, anyways, that's like a specific plot point. But all is to say, for a movie that focuses so much on weird organs, we actually don't get to see a lot of weird organs.
Just talking yourself out of your own fucking concepts or whatever. Like,
yeah,
there's a bunch of pictures of freaky looking organs they drew.
Right.
That I'm going to assume maybe the studio or the funders or whatever, just like, we do not need seven organ scenes. Like,
I don't even know. Yeah, I'm curious to read it because I know this movie was definitely like a smaller budget picture, and it was, I think you know, like,
they, I mean, a smaller,
they kind of convinced Cronenberg mm-hmm. to make another movie, and he was like, I guess so. I have this old script lying around. This wasn't like a huge effort on anyone's part, right?
There's that also too.
Yeah,
the sex was like, is like, it was like dead. And the erotic implications of they were so on the nose that it died like in an earlier scene that I'm sure was intended as like a joke or something. It was just a dancer with a bunch of ears on him, and yeah, he sewed his eyes and his lips shut. And
he dances to techno music with all of his ears.
Yeah.
And he dances really weirdly, like not even in a cool way, just a very silly way.
And then, I mean, I was thinking maybe this was like a hand show of like being self-aware and like, is Cronenberg happy even making this movie? And a woman basically shows up to the Cronenberg analog and says like, oh, this is fucking bullshit. He has so many ears on his body, and the ears don't even work. They're just sewed on. They're grown on. They This is not even like the real deal in terms of being an ear guy. And like the whole, it's like the movie coming in to tell you, like, at some point, like, in the way that you're never supposed to mention a better movie in your movie.
Here's one thing. This is what I wanted to look up.
Mm-hmm.
Cronenberg wrote this script in 1998.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I think, you know, shows.
Not necessarily. I mean, if he wrote the script in 98, how much was adapted for now?
Right. I'm sure a lot of it changed. But I just mean in terms of, like, I don't know, just the feeling of it being the smaller movie.
It's weird because, like, I could think this movie's budget easily has to be, like, bigger than that of something like fucking Videodrome.
Well, of course, yeah.
And then even then, adjusted for inflation, like...
It's still in the ball. It's apparently... Oh, no, actually, that's the intended budget. I don't know. I can't find any information on that.
But it's like... In terms of outcomes, it's just... It was very withering. Yeah, yeah. They started talking about how the movie sucked through the language of the movie. In a scene, like, sort of dressing down the idea of just artifice.
Yeah.
Like, come on. And there's some of the more damning scenes are just also, like even the scene where yeah, there's this... They're just lying next to one another, naked and being cut with knives. Where it's like, yes, it hits at something transgressive because, like, this by itself isn't something you see normally. But even then, it isn't done directly because it takes away. Have you ever seen Dead Ringers? If you've seen old Cronenberg, have you seen Dead Ringers?
So I have not. But apparently he's been on some TV shows lately, just like acting, like just randomly.
Cronenberg?
Yeah.
Oh, he's done all the time. He was in he was the villain in a movie.
I know, but I mean, like, for the first time since 2010, he was in two different movies, and oh my god, he's on the show Slasher. That's so funny.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny. I'm just reading this interview that he was doing.
Who is he as?
He has some main role. I mean, it says Spencer Galloway, main role, season 4, you know. He's on Star Trek Discovery.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. This motherfucker's been acting.
What is he in the holodeck? Hello, I'm David Cronenberg. I'm Canadian. A lot of people think I'm American, and it really fucking bugs me.
It's so funny. Apparently he, that's like how he was able to, he was like, how did they make movies? Or this just says that he did COVID protocol research because he was acting on TV shows that had COVID protocols. So he was able to see how it was all working and shit like that.
Before he
decided to make Crimes of the Future. I guess nobody got COVID making this movie in Greece. So there you go. Thumbs up to them for that, I guess.
That's good.
Although also that's just him saying that, so who knows?
I mean, it feels like someone on the set of a Cronenberg movie is going to be the type of person that would bitch about getting COVID.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. But like it doesn't seem like he engenders a quiet fan base or likewise base of like regular collaborators or people at studios he's worked with. Man, I don't know. It just it wasn't anywhere near as erotic. It sort of seemed ashamed of itself. It seemed to be like grasping at the successes of the past instead of like trying to commit to something sort of that looks new in the current framework they're in right now. Mm. Like the air quotes weird thing about Viggo Mortensen's character is, yeah, his tummy always hurts because there's always new things in his tummy. His whole character is my tummy.
Dude, honestly, I think my favorite thing about the movie was just him walking around every scene. He's just coughing and like slurping and like groaning. There's just so many mouth sounds. It was really, it was honestly like funny, like genuinely comedic to me. I want to say that was pseudo intentional. Like, I don't think he's trying to say this guy's cool. You know what I mean?
No, not at all. This is like a different kind of protagonist.
Yeah.
That I liked. It like harkens back to, you know, storytelling with heart. I don't think this movie didn't have heart. I think it was just also very confused about like outcomes, not in terms of like the ending or anything, but like what we get out of you know, these like really up and coming actresses. We'll have a lot of weird Canadian actors he pulled out of his ass, aging and still somewhat hot Viggo Mortensen. Yeah. There's a lot going on, but stakes as presented by the film are just like in little meetings. They're little separate cordoned off meetings. There's so much about this setting that, like, what this is the ending of Dead Ringers, where someone finds the twin brothers and they're just like, these guys were actually very cool. Let's orient our society around them and that weird fucked up surgical hand thing he made. Like, that's the only thing in my mind, like, makes any of this like make any sort of sense, because it's so dissonant, but then it's dissonant in ways where it's not punctuated, it's not like heightened, and it's so strange to see Cronenberg like air quotes scared of sex. It's so strange. It was sexual, but it wasn't. There's literally a scene in this film, Jake, where he says, like, you know, I've never done the old sex, I don't know if I'd be good at it, or something to that effect.
He says, I'm bad, yeah, I'm not good at the old sex, which is such a crack up.
It is a funny line.
It's also after an incredibly awkward kiss between him and Kristen Stewart, which is, again, like, very laughably funny. Like, in the
it
way
is,
that
it is
so
very
awkward,
laughably
like
funny.
Open mouth tonguing each other.
Yeah, there's just this big... there's this big... One second, I think a neighbor is yelling to another neighbor.
No, it's all good.
Okay. Yeah, there's I don't get it. I really don't get it. I think the budget was blown on the actors and the actresses, I think.
It was weird. I mean,
it was weird, but not like
seen, I'll be honest, I'm trying to figure out the last thing I saw Scott Speedman in. And it was the television show You. Oh, that wasn't that long ago, actually.
I saw Scott Speedman
in the latest season.
I saw Scott Speedman in the Triple X franchise.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. That's like almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
I know.
He still looks good for his age. Wow.
Oh, he's a handsome man. He's, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm. Oh man, I got nothing.
I'm just looking through some interviews, but even Cronenberg, I'll be honest, like, he doesn't have a lot to say about this movie, is from what is what I'm saying.
That makes sense.
Yeah, like, so apparently he's like, a gripe that he had was that he's had to change names of things. He had to change names of the machines because they might be getting, they could potentially get sued by people who have real names for real machines. So he said, he's just talking about that.
Okay.
And well, then the other thing he talks about is, this is it. This is as much as he has to say about the plastic case. It's obvious we're polluting the earth, and part of our destruction is plastic. The number one, so solution number one is we stop the production of plastic in every country. We clean the ocean system of microplastics. We clean everybody on earth of microplastics, which we've now found in the bodies of 80 to 90% of people. You say, is that realistic? My answer is probably not. For two countries to get blah, 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 that doesn't matter. Solution number two is we turn plastic into an advantage. Two solutions to the same problem, each of them sci-fi fantastic. So I guess he's really, he really is coming at it from a very dead simple angle.
Yeah.
Like, it's not nuance, and it's not, you know, it doesn't really line up with the reality of the situation in any way either, but, you know, it is a science fiction take on what will likely be some type of future issue, maybe even after me and you and I have passed, when people are even more full of microplastics. I don't know.
Oh yeah, no. We're gonna start looking different real soon.
I don't know about real soon, but like, maybe by the time we're in our old age, we'll see people like that start to look different.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
Maybe I'm wrong. To me, real soon is like 2 decades, and I'm not so certain about that. But I would say, like, next 40 years, not unthinkable.
We're gonna be pooping Legos, dog. It's gonna be
awful. I'll be 75 and shitting Legos out on the toilet. Let's go.
Let's fucking go.
I'm gonna be hooked up to the weird tentacle bed.
Oh god.
Give me the this is what I thought was hilarious. Like, what? There's something about the design of, there's two set pieces in this film. The Viggo Mortensen's bed and Viggo Mortensen's breakfast chair. And apparently the thing about the future is that if you're not, like, I don't know who these are for, to be, for starters, because what do other people have problems eating? Like, if I try to think about who uses these chairs and who uses these beds,
why is their food all fucked up and weird looking?
Yeah, why is their food?
Because it's obviously all artificial. There are no plants. There are no animals.
The purpose of the chair is to help Viggo Mortensen digest food, but it's never indicated. And I guess we presume that he has trouble digesting food because his body is constantly growing new organs. Then later we see a different guy using the chair, who. I'm just wondering if, like,
I think it's just it's a that. Chair. It's a product in the world.
No, I know. It's like, it's a
you're
product.
Getting your, you're but getting like, your big baby chair.
And for who? For whom?
For everyone.
Specifically people who grow new organs, I guess, is what they're targeted at. It's, and ditto the bed. It's just very, there's like a lot of silly questions in this movie that are ultimately like, based around showing really cool set pieces that are like a creepy tentacle bed that sucks on your hands and feet when you sleep so that it knows what to do to you. It knows how to jostle you. That's my original point. Both of these set pieces are just there to like literally like jostle Viggo Mortensen's body and like move it around, like make him uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's so fucking weird. Not like in a way that, I mean, I guess maybe that's his like gift to film, with this last one. What if I just like made a movie? Oops, all implications, just only implication, not like fully walking through an idea.
Yeah.
What if it were just, hey, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, what if you poop wrong? What if there were a chair out there? What if there were a chair out there?
What if the government was investigating organs?
What if the government was like, hey, you got papers for all those? With regard to, like, you know, a cart full of penises or spleens or livers. I think I played a video game that got this concept way better than Cronenberg did. It was called Space Warlord Organ Trader Simulator or some shit. It had like a bunch of different high-end like organs you could sell. And the further you would get in the trading market or whatever would be like sort of predicated on your ability to read people you trade with. And there were storylines you could engage with certain people. It's a little bit clicker, but it's also like story focused and all about this setting. There are types of people in the world. Like one of them is called like a ruined. And so it's implied that it's just a race of people that are completely ruined. And it shows like basically what looks like a teddy bear with one of those little, what's that thing when you're in hospital, those tubes they put to your nostrils? What are those? What's that?
Like intubator?
Intubator. So it's like an intubator on. So it looks like a childhood thing where a kid is like playing doctor with a bear, but as a race of that, and he looks miserable all the time, and you're always giving him new lungs and larynxes and shit. And the world is sort of oriented around it in a very bleak way. And some organ traders give you shit if you work with a doctor that hunts human people and gives you the organs. But not just that, you can sell, grow, and grind down and drink souls.
Yeah.
And you know, so that's a, so you have to like kind of think of an outcome because you don't have all of the information about this world or this setting. And so whatever you're going to come up with will be infinitely better than like whatever. And like one of the game's endings was basically like being able to create something with a certain set of organs that can grow other organs. This this game predates Crimes of the Future, mind you.
Right.
And so there's this one organ that just randomly keeps growing organs and can like become larger or smaller depending on whatever is associated with the organ. And so you would give like a certain amount of rare ones to this one character, and his idea was to just basically give organs to everyone who needed it. And so a big meteor falls from the sky, and it's like a meteor of meat, and he's like, finally, just one of these and we'll take care of like everyone forever. But then another falls, and then another falls, and then like they never stop falling or landing. And so society is collapsing, and children are born in miserable conditions where they don't know what other colors other than red are, and just grow up in the stench of rotting flesh if they're not killed and crushed under rotting flesh. And so the whole world is sort of buried in this concept.
Sheesh.
So like, I want to know more about that setting. It's got a good sense of humor. It's it kind of plays off of a weird trading floor atmosphere where you have like 2 minutes and you're supposed to like buy all of them, knock out fulfillment pledges to people, and like actually further storylines or whatever. Like the first one you finish is one where you hire an assassin with a special sort of shard. He then kills the guy that's always threatening you all the time, who's like your tutorial guy. And then you turn him into a meat painting. So he's like always sort of looking at you, back through the painting, and it's like got this weird iridescent quality to it. Yeah, no, I think, you know what, Jake, I'll just say, would have been better as like an adventure game. This would have been like a better Blade Runner adventure game, honestly.
I mean, honestly, the setting works for it. You can imagine clicking through like one of those weird industrial art, body art gallery type settings and like talking to different people and piecing together some sort of narrative about motherfuckers learning to eat plastic.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, I mean, think about it. You could walk around and it could like have legs of its own.
Yeah. You could pick up a purple plastic bar.
Yeah. His skin like gets more color to it and he stops looking gray and desiccated once he eats one of those plastic bars. So then you just find your character like eating phones and shit, or, you know, the remains of phones, since I don't even think phones exist in this universe. Everyone walks up to each other to talk to one another. This is definitely an old guy's idealist world. Jake, do you believe this thought that I've heard before? A lot of Western creators always create these apocalyptic settings, but it's because they want to live in them.
Right.
Like, I honestly sort of believe that here, and this is sort of his desert island.
I don't know if this is his desert island, but having just briefly skimmed a bunch of interviews wherein he kind of said the same thing about this, I do believe that this is just his attempt to have fun with the concept of how are we going to fucking deal with all of this plastic bullshit. It does seem like that was at the heart of his producer putting this old script back in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, you know, at the heart of the narrative, because it is a film about learning to eat plastic, like in a very literal sense. So, you know, he's explicitly said that too. So I feel like it's like, I think you're kind of onto it there, where it's like, I don't know if this is like his fantasy so much as this is him entertaining the idea of like, well, fucking, it would be great. Wouldn't it be great if we could just eat it all instead? Like,
yeah, there's a lot of hay made. Like, the right wing reactionary is like clearly the better one because it gives you action movies where people get mowed down in droves.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I would argue that the liberal reactionary film, but not necessarily the liberal reactionary. I believe it, or at least liberal reactionary media exists. Good one would be Robert Kirkman's The Walking Dead.
Right.
No smoke to Robert Kirkman.
Oof.
Yeah, you know.
Please remind me of this.
No. No, I'm not kissing his ass. I think that would be more awkward. It's just
no,
like...
No. I have a TikTok to show you that will make you upset, and it concerns Robert Kirkman. And I don't want to get into it right now, but I don't want to forget to show you this either. Continue.
Jesus Christ, man.
what? Just keep going.
No. I hear you, but damn. The Walking Dead, it's like basically right is might, but like it has to be the right people with the might.
Right.
Which is, with the might.
Yeah. Those are the Walking Dead.
Yeah, those are the Walking Dead. We are the Walking Dead. If you reduce the Oh, hello?
Yeah, what's up? Nothing. I could just hear your microphone moving around a little bit.
No, the microphone disconnected, strangely.
It's back.
Okay,
you're good.
Okay. So, the might is right concept just sort of happens again because it's still the same concept. It's like, no, there is no, like, right way to do this if it's, like, leading by strength. in a specific way, everyone in that set.
I'm so sorry. That was just something playing.
And yeah, this is like a recurring thread, like apocalyptic stuff specifically. Gun to your head, you cannot bring anyone to imagine a better future, like the television version of Westworld. I do wanna live in a world where robots are not only people, they're doing bodies and spaces and shit. There's so many sort of apocalypse scenarios where people imagine, okay, the law doesn't exist. I can finally kill the bad or wrong people. And it just is sort of a show of the hand. Like, no, you literally would never do civil. You wouldn't even, you wouldn't even do protest. You wouldn't do civil disobedience because that can be made illegal too.
Right.
Like you can't imagine yourself like to have.
I mean, in a lot of these lawless scenarios, the answer to, people can fantasize whatever you want, but it's like the challenge to that is what happens when someone else beats you up? What happens when someone bigger than you comes along? Like,
exactly.
What you gonna do?
And so they are right to sort of have the headspace where, yeah, okay, so some sort of force needs to exist no matter what. Sorry, we don't live in Star Trek, but even then, force exists in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek,
in Crimes of the Future, it's literally, it's represented. There's a character who's a fucking cop.
Yeah, there's a cop. There's a cop that, spoilers, Viggo Mortensen is a stoolie for.
Right. So Viggo Mortensen's an informant, and there's a cop. Yeah, he's a basically a cop himself.
Well, yeah, he's a narc. Narcs of the future, more like. But yeah,
which even that isn't really.
That is like a threadbare part of the story.
Right. It is more or less explained by Viggo Mortensen saying, "I don't like what's happening to my body. Hence, I will help the police." Because they are the only ones that are governing organs or something. That's it. It gets hand waved. Other than that.
He's working backwards from his more hardened conservative bent, and he eats the bugs, he eats the plastic, he is no longer in pain. Actually, I should wave my finger at that guy I'm working for a little bit more or whatever.
Right.
I don't know. It's we need good movies, Jake, and I don't think they're long for this world.
Let me just be like clear. One, they exist. Are they getting harder to find? Yes. Are they getting made by people who maybe aren't the ones that usually make good movies? Yes. Can I think of that many of them? Honestly, we're in an era where, oh boy.
Yeah, everything's ending, man. No good movies. You can barely own video games. Books and libraries will be gone soon.
I mean, there's a reason that my primary hobbies now are just like singular activities that I can kind of lose myself in and that I can continuously like kind of grow. I'm not like, it's different than watching a movie and being disappointed by it. You know what I mean? Or like trying to invest in a TV show and being disappointed by it or feeling like I'm wasting my time. I get what you mean, because I've been trying to think of like what's the movie that I've enjoyed the most this year. It's Jackass. It's not even a real like fictional film.
It's basically performance art and
men hating each other is what I have enjoyed the most this year, and I think that is sort of telling. The overarching thing is that streaming in general has like created this glut of media. It's nuts.
Oh yeah.
I was even reading this person say, like, there's no reason that Netflix shouldn't be able to be producing like the best content other than this like weird attempt to inflate their stock price. Like, there's no concession to like, you know, we'll lose some audiences somewhere, but we'll get more audiences somewhere else. It's just like,
well, everything's a loss leader now, Jake. I mean, to be clear, it's a lot of people inflating price because they're anhedonic too. They have no core beliefs. They are stripping businesses that they're coming from and then moving into Netflix for. Everyone's stripping out the copper wire. No one really believes this country is going to exist, anything recognizing itself, like in the next 5 years.
I mean, I would say you and I might think that, but I would vehemently disagree that the people working in Hollywood think
venture capital has been hastening so much of this, and at the end of the day, it's almost sort of like they're just trying to whittle America into a certain direction.
Netflix, to be clear, Netflix is an international company. They're doing this everywhere.
But also
there are whole divisions devoted to making whole like shows in other languages that we will never watch that are still the same type of bullshit.
More correctly, acquiring like a lot of international shows or whatever too.
Both those things happen. And I think the thing I was trying to point out, and I know like you're like, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that it was a loss leader. You know what else was? Amazon. You know the biggest loss leader in the history of the fucking world was Amazon. And what did they do? They cheapened the literal act of buying things. They cheapened it so hard that people complain about having to go to a fucking store half the time these days.
And there are no stores.
There are no stores, right? The mom and pop stores are closed. What happens when you apply this exact same sort of like schema to media, right? Netflix is a company
to everything.
Netflix is a company that delivers DVDs. All of a sudden, becomes Netflix is a company that puts TV straight into your house, and there's no need to do anything but pay $15 a month for that. And I know that's more now, but I'm talking about like the initial sell of Netflix in general.
God, what? It's what, 17 now? Or 18?
I don't even know. I just canceled it. I think it's like full. I think for if you want to stream in 4K, like if you have a nice TV, I think it's like $20 a month, if not more.
It's still less than cable television is
exactly.
The thing.
No, exactly. And that's the thing. It's like it's less than cable television. It's the Amazon of television watching. It's less than cable television. It offers a lot of the things that you like and some things you've never seen before that might be like things you like, and it's not incentivized by any type of profit structure. And you know, the Red Letter Media guys said this, it's not anything that's new, it's an incredibly obvious observation, but let's go back to it. Let's think about how movies used to make money. Well, you would have to go to a movie theater and pay for a ticket, and some amount of that money would be used to recoup the cost that it used to make the movie and distribute the movie and sell the movie and all of that type of stuff. That's how a movie made money. That's how profit was generated. It was the theater industry, right? Okay, television. How did television make money? Well, you pay to watch it. You pay to have it transmitted to your house. Even if you don't pay and you have a fucking antenna, what are you going to do? You're going to watch commercials. How do those commercials like factor into this? Well, television shows get paid by selling the time that they have to advertisers. So all of this stuff has to be at least somewhat watchable. People have to tune in for the money to work, for the money to happen. For Netflix, for streaming structures, the money happens. It just happens. They just get the money. Thus, incentive for your business becomes more about increasing that number of subscribers, which is almost always certainly going up, But when you're not concerned about making a profit on it and you're only concerned about getting more and more subscribers because your business is invested so heavily that your stock price is so inflated that whether or not you make a profit doesn't tend to matter, then yes, that is exactly how we get to the situation we are in Netflix, where they made a couple shows that to start, because they had to prove themselves, that were critically acclaimed, that had big name actors, that brought in talent from Hollywood that had done had previous pedigree, right? People like the Orange is the New Black lady was the Weeds lady, etc. And after the success of those shows, they became more and more legitimate. More and more people subscribe to Netflix.
I mean,
they get further into things. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a big deal when they bought Arrested Development at the time, right? It was like, oh wow, that's crazy. Like, we're going to get more Arrested Development and it's going to be on this fucking streaming service. Wow. And, you know, sometime in the last 10 years, that slowly evolves into, we're going to make more things. And we're going to, and when we make those things, gosh, that costs less than licensing all this shit from these other people.
Yeah.
So at the same time, mind you, every single media company is looking at Netflix and going, wait, what the fuck? We're supposed to make money off of our television and movie sales. How is this going to work? And they're scrambling to start their own streaming services. And what I'm describing is the last two decades of media culture in the United States. You know, like, I do think we're literally at a point where shit just sucks. And it's because we're on this side of the timeline.
Bubble, no. Arc, it's whatever. Everyone gets what they want, like, at all times. Well,
yeah.
Sometimes... on occasion, you're supposed to be given like one thing you need.
Well, that's just the thing, right? Like, television is no longer an event in our lives. It's just some shit that's on your phone always. And like, that's not good, I don't think, to be honest. Like,
if there was an okay thing about the COVID era, it was sort of reinventing appointment watching of something, because.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of people that did not group watch things were massive converts to the concept.
Yeah, it's very
fun. I don't think I'd ever watched episodes of a television show with eight people before.
Like, TV has always
occasionally been at parties, we'd have like a movie on.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to sit here and say TV hasn't always been a product. It literally has. However, the root of that product was, you know, like theater, like gathering around a thing to watch and be entertained. And when you isolate that experience into something that everyone just does at their web browser after they finish jerking off, like, nothing, I feel like it just turns into this less significant thing. Hence the need for it to be artistically significant is lessened in the first place. Hence watching The Sopranos nowadays, you're like, holy shit, TV actually is bad. They used to make better television. Like, you can just go back and look and go like, wow. I mean, obviously there are some good shows these days, and that's always going to be the case with art. Like, there's always some good art. But yeah, like, what we're talking about is just this general malaise that I think a lot of people can identify with in terms of like being fucking tired of media in general.
But yeah, no. It, right now, there's... anytime you see arguments online talking about the political and cultural sort of colliding, the phrase media literacy has been brought up, and then someone's like,
I'm so tired of that fucking phrase.
That I mean, I'm not going to lie. I get it.
I was a communications major. I know what it means. I'm very tired of people using that phrase.
Yeah. Be that as it may, it's like also just... Sort of because a product of streaming and products, God, calling everything content.
Yep.
Calling everything content.
Yep.
Was sort of a skeleton key for how people think about this shit.
It was the first mistake, and I am gonna, I don't even care if this is too much. I can't even describe how much me noticing the use of the word content started to break my brain, like, probably like almost 10 years ago now. It really
It's so really, reductive. It's so reductive. So
bad. It's so bad. I've never liked it. I've always hated it. This literally goes back to what I talked about on one of our first episodes, which is like when someone first showed me like a self-produced YouTube channel. I think it was Philip DeFranco. And they were like, I like this guy. And I was like, what's he do? And he was like, they were like, he talks about things. I was like, what do you mean? Like, I like, you know, I'll watch like a video game tournament or something on YouTube. And they were like, no, this guy just talks about the news. And I was like, is he funny? And they were like, yeah, I think so. And I watched it and I immediately assessed that the person wasn't funny. And I was just like, I just had this deep, heavy sigh in my like entire soul that was like, oh, this sucks. Like, why do people like this?
Yeah.
and here I am with like, and I, you know, I'm clearly in the minority. So,
I think there are things out there that I would consider content now.
And so
that I feel unmoored from the condition of making what some people refer to as,
that's the point. A, we're making content. Like we can't argue with that. B, what I mean by that is that like when I saw that this guy, my friend, was essentially going, here is content. To me, this is the same as watching a television show. That's when I was like, oh, no.
I meant content where we blank out all the vowels in the word. It's like I think of content in like the pejorative sense here.
No, I
think
I know. Like,
good God. I think there are so many Apple streaming shows that may have actually been made by like an algorithm.
I don't know. I mean, I think in general, with a lot of these streaming companies, it's the same process as Hollywood stuff. It's just that the approval rating gets through a lot more, and that you know, I can't speak to some, but that like I don't think Apple has notes on a lot of their shows. I think they curate what they put on that thing, and I think a lot of it is probably very bad, or like Ted Lasso and stuff like that. But it is a lot of it's still production companies, you know, like. I think to me it's more like Netflix shows that are like that. To me, it's like you can literally go on Netflix and see 8 shows that look like 30 Rock jokes.
Yeah, it's
and
very
that to me is representative of like, okay, what, like, who, this just exists for, I guess, fucking non-union people to work on television shows, presumably. Like,
And basically
people like just like looking at pastries, you know, like it's just always some really absurd
for a lot of people. They're also only getting their shows greenlit X amount of streamers that only go 2 seasons tops, and so they always float between those.
There's like very strange, it's this strange fucking, I had to ask someone to stream something for me yesterday because it was on Peacock.
Yeah, like, Peacock, actually, I'm okay with the idea of Peacock, and that it's just
this is just
NBC thing. This is NBC thing. It's but NBC's, we're going to be working attempt. With. Oh, sorry.
I was just saying, you know, no, we're saying the same thing. That's my bad.
Yeah, but yeah, they're trying to curate it within the image, sense of humor, and production values that have been happening within NBC.
Yes.
I think Fox News, which is separate from the Disney parts of Fox that have been purchased.
Correct. That's correct. That is what Rupert Murdoch sold.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So he still owns Fox News and stuff, I believe. He doesn't. The Fox Entertainment is what Disney owns.
Yeah, Fox and the Fox namesake has been basically stripped from all of those fucking companies.
Yeah.
They want no association with Murdoch, and they're throwing in on the streaming wars. It's
right. I mean, HBO Max, right? That's finally cemented, but that was in the works for a long, long, long time to get all of that shit fucking consolidated, because. Like, again, all of this content was previously licensed out to Netflix. And just to a lesser degree, Hulu, because Hulu is also just owned by Disney. That's the same thing. So it's always been that way. It used to be a joint venture with NBC, and I believe that it no longer is because of the existence of Peacock and other such things. But like, again, NBC had to have shows on Hulu for quite a while because of that. So like, it's just this stupid long march of tracing the timeline in which Netflix started premiering streaming into the current era of more than 10, easily more than 10 streaming services that you can go and pay to watch content from, to watch fucking licensed television shows from.
And since it's all segmented, if you wanted to get the premium plans,
it easily costs as much, if not more, than your old cable plan. You know, there's no
in an old premium cable plan at that. Because of all of the
we're talking HBO's, Showtimes, all that shit that you used to come packaged with. So it's like full circle into a stupid, like, capitalism wins again. You know, there is no.
And honestly,
never
at
any
this
good
point,
consolidation.
Because cable and all of those other net, all of those other cable companies basically have.
They have nothing to sell you but internet anymore.
They have internet integrated into their plans and stuff, and cable TV does still exist.
No, I know, but I'm saying
cable,
like,
TV is like still TV a major part of why like everyone above a certain age is completely lost to American society.
No, I know, and it's something that's a point to make. You're right. Like, A, yes, cable TV absolutely still exists. B, cable TV is primarily sold to people who do not understand the future. And I think that just means like older people. I genuinely don't know anyone below the age of 30, and I am 31, who pays for a cable plan. Everyone I know who does pay for a cable plan does so because they want the convenience that they have had their entire life and they can afford it. That's it. There's no other incentive. You know, like, it's a luxury, or it is a not, I don't want to say crutch, but it is a alternate route for people who literally do not understand. You just pay for gigabit internet and have streaming hooked up to everything, et cetera, et cetera. And also, you know, I'm sure there's places where cable might be your only option. Good internet sucks. There's plenty of reasons for it, right? But I mean, like, largely, I think we will see the cable industry really start to panic slash transform in 20 years, let's say, to just being pure internet monopoly company and not being a vehicle of selling to advertisers as much, I would guess. Although, who's to say? I'm not as informed on that as I could be. It's just that, you know, the whole idea that our whole system of entertainment used to revolve around selling ads, and now it revolves around just fucking trying to get people's money from them every month is going to catch up to cable companies. I mean, obviously it has been, but like, it will continue to do so.
Yeah, I'm personally, I'm not going to become a return guy.
When I deal with Comcast, they try to sell me cable so many times, and I just continuously say, no, thank you. I'm very happy with my internet that you guys provide. No, thank you. I'm very happy with my internet that you guys provide. That's all you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like a fucking script. But there's so many upsells. There's so many like, oh, well, you're already paying this much money. You could pay less and get cable. And I'm like, no, I do not care. I will literally pay you $10 more a month for you to not ask me to buy cable. I get perfectly fast internet for what I pay, and that's all I need. Thank you very much. Go home.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, I grew up in this era, and I have to imagine there are many people like me who don't care about having cable, etc. And it's just not like, I don't even know why we're talking about cable anymore.
I want to take a break. It's very hot in my house.
Dude, we're fine.
We're still recording. Okay.
Yeah, we're back from break. We're just going to wrap things up, though. We're back from cable talk, getting fucking diseased in the brain talking about cable television.
We have been talking about this, I think, before we cut out, or at least before editing marks. there's nothing good anymore. Everyone's converting to my way now. Everything's bad.
I've always been a fucking, what am I trying to say? I've never thought everything was good.
I'm not saying you're saying everything is good, but.
No, I got you.
Good Lord.
I get it. Everything, there's no, it just feels like there's a dissolution of, you know, mainstream media being, not a dissolution, I shouldn't lie. Everything is a fucking Marvel movie and it sucks.
And it was the only option people were really given for a long time. And so
yeah,
it's definitely a case of now, right around when we're recording this, nothing but W's for the evangelical right. And
yeah,
several so laws like... and rulings of, you know, you yep. can just, you can just, have everyone in class just, you know, let's get all these kids praying now. Let's all get kids praying at public schools because we can do that legally. There is no separation of church and state, which is funny considering how many air quotes originalists are on the Supreme Court.
Right.
They seem to really take umbrage with that one. So for me, I see it going in the only way it could. All of the rightward turn people started doing around the Trump era was the correct one. They see which way culture is moving. The liberal hegemony has popped, and it's because everyone got too greedy. And I mean, you know, God bless them. Those guys can play the long game and are unified on issues.
Listen, no one's ever going to say that fascists aren't unified, I guess.
Well, no, it's not just that. It's just also there is, even if it's a fake belief and that people are all ostensibly liberal in leadership, which is mostly true.
Right.
It's reflecting the sort of world we live in, where if you're in the field I'm in or other fields, in entertainment, I should say, everything is now hewing towards having the law approach towards not heterosexual pairings or showing that or whatever.
Right.
We're gonna see content warning gay men kissing if it's even allowed anymore. But that's a real tangible thing. We're staring down the barrel of Christian theology, sort of ruling the country in name now.
Yeah, in a more mask off sense.
And I think it's not because of culture moving in this way. It's that the sort of American character is moving in this way. Hmm. Like, I think one of the more distressing stories I had read coming out of Texas was that of a, and granted, this kid had a good outcome, air quotes good. He shouldn't have had to go through this. But the young trans man in Texas was basically ratted on.
Right.
Because HIPAA absolutely allows the physicians ratting you out to the police, and specifically Texas police that are acting with malice. Similar events are happening in Florida, and trigger laws involving sodomy are absolutely being readied right now. We are going to be going further back than the old days with the technology of now. Part of why I basically dropped off the map for a while was because, like, I was targeted by stalker sites and shit, and
yeah.
that's going, I mean, we see society moving towards this period with libertarians speaking in favor of shit like libs of TikTok, which is basically like the mainstreaming of a Kiwi Farms type mentality of having all of the information on your neighbors for the purposes of keeping them unhireable or unable to function in society, or just driving them crazy because you just keep cataloging stuff. The guy that ran that site still runs it and is like, I think, overseas now.
Libs of TikTok, you mean?
No, not Libs of TikTok. The Kiwi Farms guy. He still makes money doing this, but yeah. Makes is like breaking even to cover site fees and lawyer fees at a loss. But he's right. Able to eat, live,
right.
In, you know, abject misery, but that will become just a regular type of job within the next 5 to 10 years. And so he's got to be kicking himself, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe everyone's sort of happy with the world we currently live in. I couldn't say. But what's wild is now the entertainment industry has people with all of these causes they're very vocal about, etc. You know, or less so, you move away from that because you don't like that sort of artifice or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
These people work at the streaming companies, they work in the film industry, they work in comics, all of this, and I feel they'll take the same sort of mentality of you know, that hospital. Like, I disagree with the law completely, but these people won an election or whatever. The Democratic sure. Party has sure. that premise themselves.
Yeah, of course.
Every, I mean, Joe Biden.
We don't have Biden codifying Roe. Instead, we have him saying, well, this is how the law works.
We need to vote in enough people to fight this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they voted for a president.
Oh, yeah. No, we just got to think in the long game, you know, like voting for the people to eventually replace a Supreme Court justice. It's so stupid. It's very bad.
Well, no. So there's no opposition. And so media will reflect this. And I feel like it's already begun to. I think that's sort of why, just like a lot of the Apple shows, Severance, specifically, a lot of these people, and shit, to an extent, Cronenberg, to bring it full circle, have this belief in institutions, and that's great. Look where we are. This is where believing in institutions gets you. We have no Steve Jobs. We only have... We have no Johnny Cash. We have only streaming services. We have no cable. We have
Ted Turner.
We had Ted Turner.
I don't TBS, know the names of any TNT. Other executives.
We had TBS, TNT.
We had all the Turner networks.
Oh man!
By God, we had them all.
Yeah, we had so much within our. And even then, that was like the limited form. Cable, television, there were so many different things you would get to see.
Yeah, it was a joke. Like, it's we live in an insane version of people used to get exacerbated about cable being like, how could you ever watch 60 channels? That's nuts. And now we just live in that on PCP. Like, how could you ever watch 10,000 Netflix shows? You will not. Never. Like, there's no point. The point is, you must pay money to watch thing at some point. And the whole incentivized structure around it being like a way to advertise products is like, you know, it was never good. It meant things like product placements. It meant things like fucking commercial breaks in the first place for shows, right? But at the end of the day, it was like a system that was still that still produced, like, I don't know, like, I guess people having to work against that still produced meaningful content. And in the content era of Netflix, it's just them going, yeah, sure, that's great. Or, yeah, sure, do whatever you want. Or it's them going, we need a show about this very specific thing that our numbers told us was very good. And it's one of those two. It's one of those two, right? And, you know, again, sometimes that produces okay television. They started off making what we would maybe call back then, we would still call that, ooh, this is like prestige TV. But nowadays, there's no, like, they don't have any products like that anymore. They have Stranger Things. That's their one. And, like, no one at that company, like, they like it to a certain degree, but that is so much money. That show costs so much more money than the average Netflix show that it's not indicative of what they're doing in a large level at all. It's like a holdover almost.
I mean, yeah, no, they're trying to make money on it on its way out. I saw a pizza box.
Oh, of course, yeah.
With the Hawkins High School insignia on it.
They're on my Doritos, you know? Like, they definitely do that. They have to make. They have to.
There's again, vegan food I saw like, advertised.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very.
But you know, like you said, it's all very different these days, and just the fucking. I don't know. It's weird. I think again, coming back full circle, like what we started this off was like, new Cronenberg movie, was just kind of mid, and reflecting on what that means, like.
It was, I didn't like it. I hated it.
Yeah, no, you hated it.
But I think it's just, I don't know. It feels like there's just nothing but being given what you want. And I've come to really hate what I want. Like, I really think of the stuff I stick with in certain ways. To a degree where it's just mine, even if it's almost off-putting, it's mine. Mm-hmm. I need it.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that. You know, sentiment. I suppose I've been, you know, since I was a teenager, I've been made fun of for liking something and then immediately hating it. Not immediately, but slowly hating it as it gets more popular, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting tired of it or getting and then people being like, oh, I thought you loved this thing. And it's like, you know, Marvel movies case in point, right? I was a huge superhero comic book fan as a teenager, and you know, even into my early 20s, I was buying comic books regularly, all of that stuff, and I can coincide me caring less about it with it getting, or I can track rather me caring less about with all of that with not only me growing up but properties themselves becoming more popular in the mainstream. Yeah, it's just this very different world we live in for media. And you know, when you're a teenager, liking things can feel special or whatever, liking things that no one else likes can feel special. And I can only imagine that in the world we live in, that's why we have weirder Zoomers, because I don't know, like, that's why I have a bunch of Zoomers liking 100 Gex, to me anyway, is the content that gets produced by people younger than me has to be based on, I don't want to sound like anything that's out there right now, but when everything is mainstreamed to a certain point, how do you avoid that? How do you avoid being, how are you, how do you become, like, transgressive or whatever?
I
don't think there's too many good answers out there. I'll be honest with you. Like,
I think I have something. I think impulses towards wanting something different. My partner right now, is basically like pulling these left field film picks to watch together that have all been very good and very enjoyable. The weirdest one, though, recently was Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. Obviously, I'm going to guess it's got way more of a potent mimetic quality to someone like younger or whatever.
Yes.
But fuck, man, it's so wild that yeah, there's just stuff that universally appeals to people still.
Of course, yeah.
There's
if you show young people old movies, they will be excited by them for the most part. Good old movies.
Everyone, to a certain extent, has maybe some sort of yearning for like something different. Doesn't have to be in their media taste, but it's just these things that we like have as markers of one another, like personal preferences that people become known by. And yeah, I think that impulse still exists. So I think as bad as everything will be, and it will be incredibly bad, like there's always it's an impulse that can't really be squashed, which is sort of heartening. Yeah. Kind of feels hopeful. It's
good to keep in mind that even in conversing about this, many people at many points in time have felt the same way about their landscape of their media and the landscape of culture and trying to find reactions to it, right? Otherwise, I think a lot of the things you and I would like wouldn't exist.
Yeah, we weren't talking through the movie the whole time. We'd maybe make here or there, but it was like...
No one had seen it before either. Usually it's something we've seen before if we're talking through it, but yeah.
It was so weird that so many of you hadn't seen this film, but yeah.
Oh, wait, you're talking about Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket, yeah.
To be full transparency, I was playing Tarkov while you all were watching that and really just popping back in and out in between deaths in Tarkov.
Oh, wow. Oh, that seems pretty fucked up. Okay, I'm pushing.
it was so surreal. It's an arresting film. I can't imagine wanting to talk or joke during Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket that often.
Well, the whole tone of the movie is that of a black comedy.
I know, yeah, of course.
But the harshness of it is still kind of oppressive in a way that it isn't something you see nowadays. The impulse is to either make a shoot and cry, or with the film Jarhead, is to sort of make it like anhedonic and dry and joyless. You have to go back, not necessarily live in the past, but like realize that those things can, you know, coexist with one another, and maybe there just straight up won't be a way to beat that movie. Maybe in the same way that, you know, maybe there won't be a way to really get rid of the streaming problem. Maybe it means invigorating things we haven't really thought to try yet. I agree. I think of this with the in-person performance and the stage specifically now, in as much as I believe if done right, like that would be interesting to see invigorated.
Sure. I think there's merit to that, especially because I don't actually particularly like theater, but as an alternative medium that is not completely fucked up. Not knowing much about it, you know, I could see live performance in general having slightly more meaning, obviously COVID era, et cetera, et cetera.
And it's not like COVID isn't over. I don't think the world knows when it's ending. It's right. Probably never ending.
Right.
And it's going to mean, you know, once society moves in a certain direction, what will become transgressive? It used to be for a while LGBT stuff was transgressive. Now it is we are gonna see unprecedented violence, jailings, murders. It's numbers go up. So I think society will have a very interesting and new response. I think if there is a joyful thing about crimes of the future, it's that you can immediately imagine all of the better ways in which this could have come about, or a better thing you would like to enjoy. It's aspirational, and it's like,
it sucks. That's
how I feel anyway.
Yeah, again, like I think the difference between our general views on the film aren't actually that different, you know? Like I think we would agree on a lot of counts. It's just that to me it's I still found some stuff to enjoy in it as far as performances and I think the humor of it more so, really. But it's a very it does feel indicative of this state where even art, supposedly like art movies, are so fucking like ultimately like shallow and like aren't saying much, and you know, just like what even is an auteur film anymore. Even stuff like A24 films, it feels like there's no, like those aren't actually indie movies to me, you know what I mean? Like that doesn't count.
Again, I mean again, it's like buy-in into the image of the group of people.
It's marketed as an independent film, but like not really, like, you know.
Well, fine. But yeah.
And Neon is the people that did this movie. They're very similar. I would say A24 and Neon probably, like, you know, contemporaries. I think that's
the difference. I think if you have to like get up and have a bunch of people name it as an art film versus like,
Think of
like old Jodorowsky films. Do you think he ever billed his shit as like art film?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, I'm sure a lot of that stuff may or may not exist out there somewhere. It's just certainly not, you know, it doesn't need to be out there for everybody. I think that's part of what makes it special. It's what part of makes any type of underground art special, right?
Absolutely.
I think that's, you know, as good a place as any to wrap it up as far as relating Cronenberg through the lens of underground, up through mainstream, up through, you know, decompressing now this Cronenberg movie in the wake of our fucking shit ass media culture.
Everything is going to become worse. Just eat the plastic, kid.
Eat the if there's one thing you take away from this podcast episode, start nibbling on some plastic.
Eat the plastic. Lie down in your. Eat the plastic. Lie down in your meat bed.
Well, eat some plastic. Two, think about making your bed into a little meat cube instead.
You gotta wait. You gotta wake up, and the following day, you gotta have a big breakfast in your wee meat chair. That's it. I'm Michelle Perez. You have been listening to the Pig Iron Podcast with me, producer Jake here.
Very special episode of the Pig Iron Podcast.
And
we'll be back with Ruben at some point when his internet comes back.
Literally everything is collapsing. Dude, we're not going to have a fucking country to fucking podcast in like 3 weeks. It's going to be sick, man.
It'll be fine. We'll be broadcasting from the compound.
I want to take your rap thing. I want to ask you one question before we do head off.
What's like, up?
Like, is it just going to become like a big? Is like the cross just going to become like a big swastika style symbol when America's like gets done with it?
Oh, maybe. I'm not going to say no,
dude. Dude, we are going to see SWAT teams with big fucking white crosses on their chest.
I'm not going to say no.
It's going to be insane. It's going to be like every black metal song you've ever listened to was right. By God, they were right, folks.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
Let's not unpack that.
Hold on. I'm immediately regretting this. Maybe not every
okay,
black metal song.
I'm Googling some lyrics to black metal songs that Michelle says are right. Let's go ahead and see.
All right. I'm Michelle Perez. That was producer Jake. Spend the Pig Iron Podcast. Please like us / review us on all platforms where it's available.
Yeah, share us with your friends. Thanks for sticking with us. We'll have some guests soon. We've been sans guests for a little while now, but rest assured, it's just because we scheduling is a thing. So we're reaching out to some more people, and we're getting some nice ones for you.
Yeah, we got some good ones coming up. Nothing I can name specifically yet. We do have guests slated.
Yep.
And we also,
hell yeah,
we also have larger announcements we're building towards. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And that's it. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.